Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is award-winning, and I mean by that Newbery and Caldecott Honor author, best-selling author, and illustrator of over 30 books, Grace Lin. And we're talking about her latest book, Chinese Menu, The History, Myths, and Legends Behind Your Favorite Foods. Grace, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
This is like a book you were destined to write.
I feel that way.
Because you're sort of a food. You're sort of a foodie, and you're really into the food of your parents' culture, and this sort of hit all the different stops. Plus, it's about Chinese food, which for me is like a huge plus.
Definitely. For me too.
Talk to me about how long was this in the making?
Okay, so there's kind of two stories of how this was in the making. I first got the idea for this book back in 2004.
Whoa.
Back then I did a book called Fortune Cookie Fortune,
right,
which is a picture book for like first graders, kindergartners. But when I did that book, that is when I found the interesting tidbit. I mean, most people probably know it now, but back then I found out that the fortune cookie is actually a completely Asian American invention. That if you go to China, nobody knows what a fortune cookie is. And I remember thinking how interesting that was. And I would tell all my friends and colleagues, and I'd be like, you know, the fortune cookie's not Chinese at all. I said, it's actually an Asian American invention. And everybody that I would say that to would kind of be really disillusioned. They would actually say in a kind of a tone of disgust instead of like a tone of excitement, which I was excited about. They'd be like, so the fortune cookie's not even really Chinese, you know. And I really felt bad for the fortune cookie because I thought it was really cool that it was like this first, it's like what probably one of the first Asian American foods. And I thought that we should kind of be proud of that. And, you know, the truth is I was born here in the United States, but my parents are Asian. Oh, they're from Taiwan. And I could actually hear a lot of people say the same thing about me, like, oh, she's not really Chinese. So I was like, you know what? We need to give this Asian American food much more respect. And that kind of gave me the idea of wanting to do a book all about this American food with Asian roots. And that was kind of the beginning point. And I started slowly collecting stories ever since 2004. But, you know, very slowly, you know, just here and there. It's been on and off. But then, you know, during the pandemic, I kind of looked at those stories and I said, you know what? It's time to make this into a book.
Well, there's a lot of Asian hate that came out.
Yeah, I think that was really the impetus to make me actually do it because during the coronavirus, so many people were refusing to eat at Chinese restaurants. You know, like Chinatowns were decimated, and they were like they would not go to a Chinese restaurant. And to me, that was heartbreaking because these Chinese restaurants are just as American as that hamburger joint down the street, just as American as that Italian place, you know, around the block. And for people to not go to a Chinese restaurant because of the coronavirus, because it was just showed how much we don't consider this food American food when really it is. It's so American.
Well, and I want to talk about the term you use. It's American Chinese, not Chinese American.
Yes. That is because of my copy editor. Actually, like I called it Chinese American throughout the book. And my copy editor is the one who's like, actually, American Chinese.
Nice.
Because apparently American Chinese food is American food American Chinese food is Chinese food that has been influenced by American taste.
Right.
So So Chinese American food would be American food, like maybe we'll say like a steak that has been influenced by Chinese taste. So we'll say a steak with a special Chinese sauce on it. So that would be Chinese American food. So it, I was like, okay, it's kind of a little hard to get your wrap your brain around, but once you get it, you understand.
Is this the largest book you've done so far?
It's large in a different way. Like, you know, I've written novels before that have been like 300 pages.
Yeah, but this is big format.
Yes. I think it's like big format, so many pages, so many illustrations. And it's probably one of the most ambitious books I've ever done.
I'm hoping for a volume two already.
I would love to do a volume two. I've always thought maybe doing something called Chinese Banquet would be really interesting.
Oh, whoa.
You know, but we have to see how well this
You mean
goes.
a traditional Chinese banquet?
Yeah, you know.
With all the dishes?
Yeah, because, you know, when you go, if you are ever invited to a Chinese wedding, you know, like, you'll notice there's nine courses.
Whoa. You know,
and
and
each food actually has a specific symbolism to it, you know, and I thought that might be really interesting for people.
Well, what's interesting is how this book is set up. This book is set up like Chinese menu in here for in America, because there's a lot of sections that are just don't, as you write, don't appear in China. For instance, appetizers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a concept in Chinese cuisine.
Yes. Dessert too. They don't really
I know. And so, but what you've done is you've organized it according to a traditional American menu of Chinese food.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Because, you know, as I said earlier, it was kind of my way to hopefully show how American this Chinese food is. Because, yes, you know, it's how the Chinese immigrants took their cuisine and they adapted it here for American taste to survive and thrive. And I feel like there's kind of a little bit of a snobbery against this American Chinese food.
Yeah.
It's that snobbery where it's like, oh, it's not really Chinese.
Yeah, I am amazed about that.
And I feel like we should not have this snobbery. Like in the book, I talk about how, you know, yes, these dishes, if you have Kung Pao chicken here, it does not taste like the Kung Pao chicken in China at all.
Right.
It's been adapted. It's been changed. But, you know, what it is, the flavor of it here in the United States, it's really the flavor of resilience. It's the flavor of thriving here in the United States. You know, in a lot of ways, it's the flavor of America, you know, and I think that's actually something to be proud of and something to really cherish.
Is this an all-ages book?
That's how I feel about it.
Okay, that's how I feel about it. I mean, I read it and I didn't feel like I was reading a book for younger people.
No, I really felt like this book was meant for all ages because it's a collection of about 40 stories. So they're short stories. So like a parent could read it to their kindergartner, you know, and a middle schooler could read it to themselves. And the adults could read it to themselves and have it on the coffee table. And when friends come over and say, hey, did you know that chopsticks were invented like this? You know, so I really felt like it's a all ages book. When I explain it to people, because it is kind of hard to explain until you, like, have the book in your hand.
You need to have the book in your hand. It's
I kind of say, like, you know, like a collection of Greek myths? And they're like, okay. And I'm like, it's just like that, but Chinese food.
It is, though. That's exactly what it is. I mean, first of all, every chapter starts, and you actually start before food. You start with chopsticks, and we'll talk about that in a second. But then it's, first of all, I don't want to deny you your art either. Your art is wonderful for this book.
And, thank you.
And there's a lot of it, a lot of full page art, as well as smaller stuff. And then there's these wallpapers that come between chapters too, which I thought were just great. I sort of like that for my computer. And then there's all these little illustrations that you did for this book. So not only is this a wonderful book to eat when don't eat it when you're hungry, because it'll drive you crazy. But it's a beautiful visual book too.
Yeah, I really wanted it to be. You know, like, I really wanted to be a book that felt like a piece of art in a way. You know, like, yes, you can definitely see this book on a computer, you know, on a Kindle, on your whatever. But I wanted it to be like, when you held it, you're like, oh, I really would rather have this as an object, you know, versus
absolutely.
On your computer.
Absolutely. And so there's pictures at the beginning. Then there's your talk about the food itself, like the whole real history of the food. And then you go into usually several different stories about mm-hmm. the food, which are amazing. Now, you go through different dishes. Now, you can't possibly go through the entire menu. That's why I was hoping there was volume two. But you really hit a lot of the important things, including big general topics like rice and tofu you cover in this book. The stories are wild. What are the sources that you used for the stories?
So like I said, I've been collecting these stories since 2004. And so for over the years, I've just been collecting from my parents, my relatives, you know, like little things that I would read on the internet or like bad translations and things. But when we finally decided to make this into a book, and what happened was my editor said, oh, it will be classified as nonfiction. And I was like, what? Like, I guess myths and legends are classified as nonfiction in the library. And that kind of made me really nervous because, you know, sometimes my dad tells stories that may or may not have real, like, roots in Chinese history or Asian history. And so I actually hired a research assistant. She was a Chinese studies major in Smith College. And I basically said, you know, these are the stories I have. Can you find me secondary sources for all of these stories? And not only did she find secondary, she'd find third, fourth, fifth. And So I would take her sources and my own, and a lot of them I kind of mixed together to make the stories. So I tried to take, like, kind of like the essence of, like, the four stories put together and write my version. And sometimes she actually would find versions of the stories that were completely different and sometimes even better than the one I had, and I would use hers instead.
Now, but I love those touches in this book. When you talk about your family, it made the book very personal.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Now, let's start with some basics. There are eight great regional cuisines of China. Do you have a favorite regional cuisine?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it depends on my mood. Because, you know, Szechuan is the spicy one, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, there's sometimes when you just feel like you want spicy food. So, like, you go there. And then Cantonese food is really what is American Chinese food, you know, because most of the immigrants that came from came from China during the Gold Rush were from southern China. So what we think of as Chinese food is mainly Cantonese food. But then recently there's been a lot of Hunan. So I don't know which one would be my favorite.
Well, I think it also depends on the restaurant.
Yes, that's true. But the ones that I don't really have a lot of experience with would probably be like the more northern areas.
Yeah, yeah.
So the southern areas, I probably have more familiarity with their food.
Well, let's sample this book because there's so much in this. And the book starts before there's even food, chopsticks. Now, the great thing is they were originally called zu.
Yes, they were originally called kuaizi.
Okay, right. And one of the things you learn before you even get to the stories is that there are chopstick taboos, that yes. they're sort of bad manners. Could you talk about some of those?
Sure. You're talking about they're called kuaizi. So the zu is another word for which meant stop. That's the original name where it was for chopstick with zu, but when you stop. But the people that lived in the along the coast were sailors, did not like that word. They were very superstitious, so they felt like that would stop their boats. so we changed it to kuaizi. Sorry, that I was
makes sense.
I was thinking about another kuaizi. Okay, so you're talking about the first name of chopsticks. Yes. So now there's many, many taboos for chopsticks, and these have been around for a long, long time, and we still have them. So the first one is you never put your chopsticks straight up in, like, a bowl of rice, because that looks like incense sticks at a temple, and that's what you do to honor the dead, and that's kind of like inviting the death to your table. So you don't want to do that. Another thing that is really interesting is when most of the time Chinese food is served family style. So if you get the big plate in front of you and you're going to take food and put it on your plate, you should not take your chopsticks and dig around for like the pieces you want. Like say you just want the broccoli, like I want that broccoli. And
right, right, broccoli. Yeah.
Like, that's considered very, very rude. They call that grave digging.
Now, there are several stories about the origins of chopsticks, which I'm not surprised about. I mean, it's a basic, food implement. One of my favorites is how chopsticks prevent poisoning. Can you give me a version of that? Because your father's involved in that one, too, isn't he?
Yes. So my father, not every day, but once in a while at dinner, you know, he'd have the bowl of rice and he'd be like, oh, let's see if this rice is poison. He would take his chopsticks and stick it in and nothing would happen. And he's like, I'm safe. You know? It's like, if it was poison, the smoke would happen and my chopsticks would change color. And so that's one of the stories that he told me, you know, and I was like, and upon doing this book, I researched it and found out where that story came from, because it actually was a myth that was believed. Like emperors would use silver chopsticks because they believed they used that it would detect poison, and that comes all the way from the story where this minister who willingly left the kingdom. Was waiting for the new emperor, new kingdom, new dynasty to arrive. But because he willingly left the old dynasty, he was quite poor and lived in poverty. And his wife, who was used to living in the kingdom, was really, really resentful of that. Like now she had to live in poverty too. And so she was so resentful of that she decided to poison him one day. And so she served him poisoned meat. But before he could eat the meat, this bird came flying in and like pecked his fingers and said, don't eat that, don't eat that. And then he followed this bird outside and the bird landed on two pieces of bamboo and it said, don't eat that meat with your hands. Eat it with what's beneath my feet, which were the two bamboo sticks. And so he took the two bamboo sticks, went back in, started to put the bamboo sticks into the meat, and they started smoking and turning black. And that's when he realized that the food was poisoned.
Now, have chopsticks evolved in the sort of the material they're made out of? Because I've seen some really fancy chopsticks.
Yeah, you know, because they started the stories say that they started, depending on which story you believe. Some stories say that they started with the humble bamboo.
Yep.
Others say they started with jade.
Whoa.
They definitely evolved to many, many different kinds of like gold and silver and jade because they became very, very symbolic, you know, of many, many things. But have they evolved? Not, you know, and one of the things that makes chopsticks so wonderful is that the actual like shape and use of them have not really evolved too much. They're a little bit longer than Japanese ones because you share food with Chinese chopsticks. But, you know, the whole reason why we use chopsticks in Chinese culture is because Confucius thought that using knives and forks at the table was uncivilized. He thought that those were weapons. And so you shouldn't use those at the table. You should use something that was much more refined. And that's why we use chopsticks, because that was the sign of civilization and refinement and cultivation.
I want to mention that you do have a small illustration about how to use chopsticks.
Yes.
For people who find them, myself, who are like hopelessly clumsy around, although I try my best.
Yeah, me too. Honestly, I don't hold the chopsticks right either.
Whatever works.
As long as it gets the food to your mouth, it's fine.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is award-winning, best-selling author and illustrator of over 30 books, Grace Lin. And we're talking about her latest book. I cannot recommend it enough. It is amazing. Chinese Menu, the history, myths, and legends behind your favorite food. Let's talk about tea for a second. Now, one of the other things that sort of came up to me in this book is You would sometimes mention a dish or like a specific type of tea I had never heard of before. And I want to talk about the tea one that was like, now I have to get it. White Hair Silver Needle Tea.
Yes.
What the hey? I actually went online to look at some. Uh-huh. It looks really odd.
Yeah. Well, it's for a long, long time, you could only get this tea in Asia because it was considered so delicate, you know, and it wouldn't stay in the correct form if it made the voyage to the United States and things like that. But nowadays, obviously, you can. So if you go to like one of those very high-end Chinese restaurants or even a high-end tea place, they'll have it. And it's worth trying. I remember having this kind of tea in Taiwan, and I remember like it was that we had these little teeny tiny teacups, and my parents were like pouring it, and everybody tried like a little taste, like almost like it was like liquid gold or something.
Well, it's like the name of it sounds like that. I mean, it sounds like a rare dish.
Yes. Well, that's so interesting about tea in traditional or ancient Chinese cuisine. You know, there was actually no beverages when you had food. There was no tea and there was no water. What you drank was soup. That's why there's a whole soup section, because soup was really important to Chinese cuisine, because that was your beverage. But tea was extremely important in Chinese cuisine, but it was not considered something you had with your meal. It was like a whole separate time, you know, like there was like, in some ways, like I guess it would be like the English, like tea time, you know. So tea was very, very important.
The traditional Chinese meal, as you write, consists of soup, rice, 3 to 4 hot dishes, all served at once.
Yes. And in fact, what's so interesting is, you know, our main dishes, you know, like general toast chicken, kung pao chicken, you know, those are our main dishes. And we have the rice on the side. But traditionally, the rice is your main thing. And you just you took a little bit of general toast chicken, and you took a little bit of kung pao chicken. You know, those dishes were supposed to be the side dishes.
Wow. Now, a lot of what are called on the contemporary menus as appetizers, You write that are probably served as festival foods or banquet meals. What did you mean?
Yeah, so there's no real practice of appetizers in Chinese cuisine. Like you said, you usually just serve those dishes all at once in a traditional Chinese meal. So, but Chinese immigrants realized that, you know, Western people wanted appetizers and desserts. And so what they did was they searched for things that could work for appetizers. And some of the things were like dumplings. Mm-hmm. Now, dumplings are usually eaten at Lunar New Year. It's a festival food. But they realized that would work really well as an appetizer. You know, another food is spring rolls. It's called spring rolls because they eat it during their spring festival. So they basically searched for all these convenient foods or festival foods and used them as appetizers.
I learned so much. I'm so glad you explained the difference between egg rolls and spring rolls. I could never understand why it was called a spring roll until I read your book. The great thing is where Crab Rangoon came from. It's from Trader Vic's.
Yes. It's
not even vaguely Chinese.
Yeah, not even vaguely Chinese. But, you know, because Trader Vic was like, it's Polynesian. And, you know, Chinese restaurateurs are like, we need appetizers. Okay, he says it's Asian. They believe it. We'll use it. They were nothing if not pragmatic, the Chinese immigrants.
Now, serving dumplings, I mean, there's so many etiquette things in this book, too. There's so much in this book. Isn't that the one where you never pile them in a big pile? You serve them sort of like next to each other around.
Yes, because if you look at the shape of them, and this is actually it ties into the chopsticks. If you look at the shape of them, they look like boats. Little boats. And so the people who lived on the coast, like I said, were very superstitious. And so if you had all your boats all jumbled up, they felt like that was bad luck. So they always wanted to put them very neatly, smooth sailing. That was why your dumplings always had to be in an orderly, arranged way.
Scallion pancakes. We only have a few minutes left. But you give out your mother's recipe.
Yes. So a lot of people ask me, is this a cookbook? And I was like, no, it's not a cookbook.
But you do have some recipes in it.
But there's one recipe in there. The reason why it's not a cookbook, number one, is because I'm actually not that great of a cook. I love to eat. I love food, but I'm not that great of a cook. So I would never deign to make a cookbook. And the other reason why it's just scallion pancakes is because this book is all about American Chinese food,
right,
which is actually quite different than the food my mom would serve at home. But the one of the few foods that did kind of make that bridge was the scallion pancakes. So we did make scallion pancakes at home, not often, but we did make them at home, and they also served those at a restaurant. So that was one of the few foods that we had at home and at the restaurant. So that was a good one to share.
I think that's one of those dishes that you need to cook it right, or it gets really
yeah.
tough. At some restaurants, they don't know how to do it right.
Yeah, or it's too brown. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's one of those things that it's very simple, but not easy.
Ooh, that's a good. Now, did I understand you that they became pizza?
That is a completely untrue myth.
But it makes so much sense, Grace.
Yes, I completely believed it, and that's why I put it in the book, because this was a myth I was told when I was a kid, and I completely 100% believed it, and I was so proud that the scallion pancake inspired the pizza. and it was only upon researching this book that yes, we found that the myth existed, but it was completely not true.
Oh, that's too bad. We have like minutes left. I just want to ask you about one thing that I don't think I came across in the chapter on tofu, which I happen to love tofu. You mentioned stinky tofu.
Yes.
What is that? Is it actually stinky?
Yes, it really smells bad. And it's kind of a fermented tofu. You know, now we drink like kombucha, right? And
oh, okay.
So it's kind of like a tofu that's like a kombucha. You know, it's an acquired taste, but if you like it, you like it, you know?
Can you get it here in America?
I bet you can in certain specialty places. I'm sure you can. It's an acquired thing.
Okay.
And, like, definitely New York City. Yes, you can get it in New York City, I know, because I've had it there before. But, like, you wouldn't find it in your average American Chinese restaurant.
We're completely out of time, and we've only started what's in this book. There's so much in this book. My returning guest tonight is award-winning and best-selling author and illustrator of over 30 books, Grace Lin. And we're talking about her latest book, Chinese Menu, The History, Myths, and Legends Behind Your Favorite Food. This is a book that will actually make you go out to a restaurant. Really.
Yes, I hope so.
And bring the book with you and read the story. That's the best way to use this book. Grace, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's so much fun talking to you.
Oh, it's great. This is a wonderful book. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.